July 18, 1977. Interview on the history of the Louisville Jewish community. Interviewer, Sylvia Goldstein. Interviewee, Miss Sarah Landau, 1441 South 4th Street. Miss Landau, you were not born in Louisville, were you?
No, I was not. I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, when my mother was visiting a sister, and I arrived prematurely. However, both of my sisters were born in Louisville.
And then y'all moved to...
Much later. Let me talk about Louisville first.
Fine.
Well, it's on my mind. The first address that I remember, the first home, if you like, that I remember, and the number has stuck to my mind all these years, is 536 East Market Street. I remember it because I remember the school we went to, which I see now and then when I ride up East Market Street. My father had a little store in the front, a sort of one-room factory behind it in which two or three women made knee pants. And behind that was evidently a living room or dining room, kitchen, and a garden. And I remember the garden particularly because my mother had 10 green thumbs. I remember a grocery at the corner of Hancock. 536 must be between Jackson and Hancock. That's so it is in my mind.
I think that's right.
There was a grocery store owned by a family named Goldsmith, and Mrs. Goldsmith and my mother were very good friends. I am not sure about a little girl in that family. I know that later someone in the Goldsmith family and my father entered into a partnership that did not last long. I remember an elderly couple who ran a butcher shop on Market.
I'm going to have to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
All right.
All right.
There were three people in that butcher shop, a Mr. and Mrs. Rothstein, I think it's Nathan Rothstein, of that I'm not sure, and Mrs. Rothstein's brother, whose name I do not remember. But Mr. and Mrs. Rothstein assured us that we were their grandparents because we had complained other children have grandparents and we did not. The parents of both my father and mother died in Europe. I remember between our place and Hancock, there was a repair place, not a blacksmith shop, because they didn't shoe horses. They did repair wagons, owned by a Mr. Weber. My father later told me that the reason he registered Republican was because Mr. Weber saw to it that he registered Republican when he first registered to vote. At the moment, this is about all I remember of East Market Street. Shortly before Matilda was born, we had moved west to 924 West Market Street. At that place, my father had a shoe store. Again, we did not live there long because shortly after we were there, Matilda was born. And when she was about 2 weeks old, my mother had a very serious accident. And for this reason, my father moved us south. At West Market Street, I remember very distinctly two families on the same block east of us. There was another shoe store, I think, owned by the Greensteins, and they had a son named Joe, whom I saw later on when I used to visit Louisville, and more recently renewed acquaintances with some of his family, particularly his daughter, Joan Lynch. Another family on the 800 block was named Gordon, and they were very, very good friends. Jenny Gordon and my Aunt Annie were chums. Rose Gordon and I were chums. Rose had several brothers, Harry, whom we call Nunny, Charlie, and Ike. I do not recall others. Jenny Gordon married Harry Cohn, and Irma June Swito is, I think, the daughter of that union. So much for Louisville in my earlier years. I can't at this moment remember much more. For the short time that we lived in the West part, we went to school. Could it have been 8th and Walnut, 6th and Walnut? But a teacher stands out, Miss Emma Groman. But most of my recollections, as would be natural, I think, for a teenager growing up, or growing into teenage and then growing up, were of Louisiana. You want to cut that off in just a minute? Schools in Louisiana, of course, were at a lower level than schools in Louisville, so that we were recognized as advanced students, if you want to call us students, and were put up into higher grades. I graduated from high school then in something between the 10th and the 11th grade. General living was a little bit more formal there too than here. I can recall that we went to dances, chaperoned, but went. I can remember helping to lead a cotillion at the age of 15. We were early put on the train for New Orleans. Mother and Dad saw us off at 7 in the morning on a Saturday. We would go to D.H. Holmes or some other such place and shop for Mother if she had something she wanted to do, have lunch, and go to a matinee. We got into the habit early of going to the theater and also the opera. The French opera came into New Orleans during the Lenten season. I think during the Lenten season, this I can't be sure of because it contradicts Catholic Louisiana. But during some season when they were not in New York, so that the so-called French opera was an early start in our education. In order to stay in school, I would take such subjects as business, bookkeeping, shorthand and typing, domestic science, where I recall making a hat and a dress to match, things of that sort. When we came back to Louisville, Matilda, the youngest, was nearly ready for high school.
Plumber.
Yes,
just. I just wanted to ease your mind a little bit.
We came back to Louisville in 1914, and almost immediately war broke out in Europe, and I remember my father saying, "Don't worry, child, it'll be over in 3 months." Little did he know that his older daughter would be going over in 1917. Shortly after, we moved into our home at 1445 4th Street. At that time, this block on 4th Street was what I call a Yiddish Medina. The Adises lived next door to us. The Switos lived just south of them. The Jacobsons lived a block or two north of us.
Excuse me just a minute, Miss Sarah. You mean this house? Let me say
one more. And the Linkers lived on Ormsby, close to us. All these people became the very closest friends of my parents.
Move it off a minute.
Oh, I just want... It wasn't clear you were in the same house you're in right now. I want you to bring that in.
No. I have to confess that I lost the house at 1445 4th Street in the Depression after my father died. His business was a partnership. Partnerships are involved with your personal possessions. And as a partnership, with his death, things had to be dissolved. And so the banks owned our home and this apartment building, which I now own and live in. Coming back to our early days in Louisville then, Matilda started high school, and I started not at the University of Louisville then, but getting some of the subjects which I lacked in my Louisiana training. I went to Bowling Green, Kentucky, and took courses one summer. I went to Bloomington, Indiana, and did all of my so-called sophomore English. I earned my way at Bloomington by teaching in the high school, and to this day, I hear from some of those people in the high school. Again, with my capacity for making friends, I did so in Bloomington, and some of those friendships have continued not through the parents, but through the children and through their children. Returning from overseas, I entered the University of Louisville and got my bachelor's degree and my master's degree there. I earned the first of the speed travel fellowships, went to the University of Pennsylvania, and stayed a year and a half. Illness sent me back home for the second semester of the second year. I continued teaching at the University of Louisville, working my way up from an assistant to William Belknap, to his successor, to taking full-time courses and teaching full-time courses in economics. I spent my summers at such schools as Columbia. I had had good training at Pennsylvania, Virginia. It became a hobby of mine to go to summer school in different schools to get the points of view of the teachers of economics in those schools. I finished at the University of Louisville with the rank of associate professor. I was also for some years Dean of Women, or what we called advisor to women. In other words, no Dean of Women then. When in the 1929 era, the university had certain difficulties, I resigned along with the dean, Dean Anderson, who was fired, but in the first year of the controversy, 29-30, 25 out of 41 members of the faculty in the liberal arts division either resigned or were dismissed. From there, I did more graduate work at the University of Chicago, taught at Roosevelt College, now Roosevelt University, and came back to Louisville permanently in the 1950s when I found that teaching classes of over 100 each not only became burdensome, but that I didn't know who was in my class or why. Again, some of these students remain as friends to this day. I have lived in Louisville Since, in the beginning, was very active with the Council of Jewish Women, I omitted the fact that it one short period while I was studying and teaching at the University of Louisville, I acted as girl's secretary for the YMHA. The then girl's secretary married and left, and Colonel Levy asked me to carry on, which I was glad to do. During that period, I was fortunate in representing the HA and particularly council with the National Council of Jewish Women in New York, working under Cecilia Rosofsky, then considered an expert on immigrant women. This was the period of the quotas. We would meet the boats. If we knew ahead of time that a woman was to be assigned to us, and if we could locate families in Manhattan, the Bronx, or Brooklyn, we visited those families, alerted them, and met the boat. If the immigrant was to go inland, we met her. She was assigned to us. We saw that she was comfortable. We stayed with her until we put her on the train in care of Traveler's Aid and received assurance that she had arrived and been met by relatives. This, to me, was one of the more important things in my development and in my relationship with foreign newcomers from abroad. Later on, I taught English to many of the later comers from Italy, a number of families whom I remember well, from Germany as they began to come in, and from Eastern Europe when they began to come in. At one time, I had as many as 17 of these people in my home on a Sunday. We sang American songs and learned a good bit of English. Later on, I tutored some of them for their citizenship, and I remember particularly a Mrs. Balin, the mother of the current Balins in the tin business. This is a little disorganized, but my mind, as you can tell, is jumping. I go back to my first contact with the foreign-born. Mrs. Klauber was at that time the chairman of the work with the Council of Jewish Women, and it was under her direction that I first met some of these people. Later on, I was chairman myself of international relations at the council under Leontine Furman. And during that period is when I think we had our larger number of newcomers. However, the two women who probably influenced me both during my membership of the council were Blanche Ottenheimer and Beck Judah, whom everybody called Aunt Beck. I owe to Mrs. Judah particularly my persistence in going to the University of Louisville and working my way through there to get my degrees.
You have to cut me off because
I want to go back to my reference to Mr. Rothstein, whom we call Grandpa Rothstein. He was the first person I knew who was personally and sincerely, terrifically interested in Palestine. He was the first person from Louisville I ever heard of who went back to Palestine. I have in my possession today a souvenir that he brought to my mother, a carved ivory needle case. It has a peephole in it, and when you look through that, there is a mosque. In referring to the difficulties at the University of Louisville, there was a very small touch of anti-Semitism connected with it. One or two of the Jewish girls came to me, remember I was advisor to women, and told me that the rumor was about that the president was going to get rid of the Jewish members of the faculty. This shocked me so that I went to Bishop Woodcock, who was the patron of a small group of both faculty and senior students and graduate students, of a little discussion group. And Bishop Woodcock was shocked at any such idea, and I won't comment on a remark that he made at the time, other than to say that Jewish converts are still, to Christianity, are still Jews. However, when the showdown came the following April, one of the first people to lose her job was Ida Levin in the social science department. Shortly after that, but not because of anti-Semitism, I'm sure, Professor Louis Gottschalk both resigned and was fired at the same time. Professor Gottschalk objected to the dismissal of one of the men in the history department. He went to the newspapers, and because of the publicity, which came out in big headlines, the president fired him. As one knows, later presidents of the university honored Professor Gottschalk, first by giving him a Minerva, which is one of the awards, and an honorary degree, and the current president, Miller, Dr. Miller, has named one of the buildings for Professor Gottschalk. My own resignation came automatically. In the hearings before the Board of Trustees, there was a letter indicating that I was to be dismissed. My hunch is that Mr. Seligman on the Board of Trustees stopped it. Not so much on me personally as on the dismissal of Jewish members. However, Mr. Seligman, in my interview with him, accepted an automatic resignation on my part if Dean Anderson, who was an excellent dean, and particularly an excellent dean during troublous times, was dismissed. Professor Anderson was dismissed the following year, and my resignation became automatic. It was then that I went to the University of Chicago as a teaching fellow. Our first recollection of the synagogue was at Floyd and Chestnut, where you walked down a few little steps to enter a very modest building. I'm not positive about the name of the rabbi then. I do know I have run into it recently, and I might remember it. However, when the congregation moved to Brooklyn College, shortly after we were there, Rabbi Gittleman and his bride came. And from that day until the congregation moved to its present quarters, and all during Rabbi Gittleman's life, he not only was a beloved rabbi, a wonderful teacher, but a wonderful friend. He came to see my mother regularly, particularly during the latter years of her life. Mrs. Gittleman always reminded me that my mother once sent her a large box of candy with a note, "Remember, I love you too." This has been a very recent loss in our friendships, but full of good memories.
Miss Sarah, would you tell me about your all's life a little bit more in Louisiana?
We lived in two towns, one very shortly, Crowley, but the major town that had good schools was Lafayette. In Lafayette, there were exactly 9 Jewish families besides our own, two of German extraction, and all the rest of French, except my father, who was naturally of Russian, Polish, Orthodox. There was a little temple, but for the high holy days, particularly Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I can recall my father with his tallis overhead conducting the services in Hebrew. Recently, I ran into a picture of Rabbi Saul Landau's father with a tallis exactly like that one of my father. And in looking back, I can realize how odd this seemed, particularly to the French Jews in Lafayette, all of whom were Reform. In later years, the only thing I remember about our service is Eula Karana Nathanson singing every Rosh Hashanah, rose leaves falling one by one.
We didn't pick it up earlier.
I simply must assume that my father came to this country to get away from military service. I know he had to slip out of Poland into Germany, and they did that by bribing people. It was only after he reached cousins in Philadelphia that he was able to send for my mother. Their first child was born in Europe, a little boy who didn't survive. Their second child was born in this country and did not survive, also a boy. There is very little that I know about the background. My mother's brother was one of the 5% permitted to go to the university. He was a lawyer. And later on, my parents sent for his children. There were four girls and two boys. So that we knew only of their vicissitudes in this country and very little about the background.
Mr. That's the way.
In the 2 years that I was secretary, girl secretary at the YMHA, which was had a woman's division, I succeeded a woman named Cohen, and I preceded Renetta Mayer. Mine was an emergency appointment, the girl secretary having married and moved away. My chief function was to provide a number of clubs for the girl members who were coming in, and of course, since my fort was almost entirely discussion groups, I had senior and junior discussion groups. There were many activities for younger children, but most of them are with a gym, as were some of the older ones. But out of that work with the girls in the YMHA, there are still very many recollections, and there are some people back in Louisville who were girls then, who are of course women now, who remember it very well and who keep up their friendship with me as a result of that. And I'm going to name one because she has come back to Louisville to live, and that's Minnie Passamanic, who reminds me very often about the girls' discussion groups at the YMHA, the women's division. That's all I can think of for the moment. I had a recent visitor from Pennsylvania, a former Louisville girl. In fact, one of the youngest teachers of French at the University of Louisville. Early in World War I, this must have been in 1917, when the soldiers went to Fort Knox, the then Dean Patterson of the university asked Amy Helen Rosenfelder to go out to Fort Knox and teach some of those men French. It so happened that Miss Rosenfelder also organized a small group of students who were studying French. into a French club at the University of Louisville, and I was a member of that club. So both as a neighbor, Amy Helen Rosenfelder, and as a French teacher, I have kept up this friendship. She comes to Louisville 4 times a year to see her sister, Mrs. Joseph Rauch. On this trip, we reminisced a great deal about people we used to know, and one of her references was just a story that her father always told about a very well-known man named, and this is the name we all used, Old Man Denbitz. Now, I never knew Mr. Denbitz, but I knew 3 of his daughters, Miss Emily, who taught piano.
Oh, well, that sound is moving, isn't it? Yeah, that sound is not moving on.
Miss Emily gave piano lessons, and the married sister, Miss Annette, Mrs., I forget her last name, but Annette, lived in Philadelphia, and I saw her on one of my trips. But the stories about Old Man Denbitz are very interesting. One or two I remember very well that Miss Rosenfelder told me the other evening. One was that he would forget and would do a childish stunt of walking down the street, 1 foot on the curb, 1 foot on the street, so that this was an uneven gait and he was absent-minded and didn't notice it. The second story was told to her by her father. Namely, he saw Mr. Denbitz leaning against the building, his head in his hand, and Mr. Rosenfelder tapped him on the shoulder and said, Mr. Denbitz, are you ill? Can I help you in any way? And Mr. Denbitz said, go away. I made an awful move in chess last night, and I'm trying to think out as to how I could have done better. One also remember that Mr. Rosenfelder himself was blind, and first his son Saul had to leave school. Mr. Rosenfelder became blind, evidently late in life. And first his son Saul and each of his sons in turn had to leave school to help their father. He then went into the insurance building and as a business, and as I recall, he also took orders for coal, because in those days we all used coal. But I have one story about Mr. Denbitz that Miss Emily herself told me, and I want to repeat here. He had declared that he was going to the Republican convention and would second the nomination for Abraham Lincoln as president. There were members in Louisville who were so opposed that they threatened to horsewhip him if he did it. Mr. Denbitz went, he did second the nomination, he did return, he was not horsewhipped, and his named his next child Abraham Lincoln Denbitz. That Mr. Denbitz is the father of Louis Denbitz in Washington, D.C., who was with the Federal Reserve System, and of Annette Denbitz Berman, a lawyer in the city of New York, a very, very accomplished family. Mr. Denbitz, in his early years in this country, not only wrote an amanuensis for secretaries, he wrote one of the first books on Jewish traditions and practices when he came to Louisville. This is a very important part of that immigration after the abortive revolution of 1848. And Mr. Denbitz was responsible for young Denbitz, a young Brandeis going into law. Louis Denbitz Brandeis took the name Denbitz after he was successful in law. Before Miss Emily passed away, her nephew who had been taken to Palestine when he was 11 years old, and who is now an Israeli citizen and in the Department of Justice, had an appointment in Canada. I wrote and invited him to come to Louisville. I had Emily here at the time. Miss Stella had already passed away, and we had a fabulous afternoon. She was seeing a nephew that she hadn't seen since he was a little boy. I, on the other hand, have met him twice in Israel, but was very happy to have him here. One of the things we did while he was here was go out to the university, to the law school, so that he could see the Brandeis Library and also the crypt where the justice and his wife are buried.
What was the relation between the Demets and the Brandeises?
They were cousins. A few nights ago, I saw a picture of Rabbi Joseph Rau leaving a huge memorial bouquet of chrysanthemums at the crypt of the justice and Mrs. Denver.
I could put something else in there that's not good, but I'm not going to do it.
I need to correct that. It was the justice and Mrs. Brandeis. I would like to add that on many occasions I lived in Washington or stayed in Washington with Sarah Denbitz, who was the wife of Abraham Lincoln Denbitz. It is their son who is Lewis and was with the Federal Reserve, and their daughter, Annette Denbitz Berman, who is an attorney and was a justice in New York. As I recall one of Miss Emily's numerous stories, which we could not get her to write out for us, is this one. Namely, the wife of the justice wrote a book called Pilgrims of 48. And in it she tells of the family coming down to the falls of the Ohio and bringing with them one of the first pianos, which they evidently brought all the way over from Austria. In addition to the Denbitzes and the Brandeises, there were the Whaleys and the Takows. This I remember distinctly. There was also a relative, I wanted to say a sister to Dr. Alfred, which would make her also a sister to the justice, Dr. Florence Brandeis, who was one of the first woman physicians in this part of the country. A very, very able woman herself, a very sweet, a very kindly woman. I do not know who has the copy of Pilgrims of 48. Dr. Florence Brandeis had loaned it to me. I, in turn, had returned it to Mrs. Judah. And the last I heard, Mady Brandeis had.
Where do the Brandeises live in Washington?
July the 18th, 1977. Interview on the history of the Louisville Jewish community. Interviewer, Sylvia Goldstein. Interviewee, Miss Sarah Landau, 1441 South 4th Street. Miss Landau, you were not born in Louisville, were you?
No, I was not. I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, when my mother was visiting a sister, and I arrived prematurely. However, both of my sisters were born in Louisville.
And then y'all moved to...
Much later. Let me talk about Louisville first.
Fine.
Well, it's on my mind. The first address that I remember